I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. The effects of the next presidency will be felt by millions over the coming years, and no one will experience those impacts more deeply than people not yet old enough to vote, which explains why psychologist Wes Crenshaw heard from young people in the middle of election night struggling to deal with the success of a campaign that critics said was based on nativism and bigotry. He'll explain why this event is so hard for young people, help them take a deep breath, and put it all in perspective. We want to hear your stories, too. How are young people in your life dealing with the election? We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Talking to your kids about what just happened in American politics has proven trying. Children on both sides of the political divide are confused. Some want to know how someone as off-putting and bigoted as Donald Trump was during the campaign could be elected president. Meantime, some Republicans want to know why so many people are saying such horrible things about the incoming president from their party. This hour, a conversation about how to approach these conversations with your kids, which we assume are ongoing these days in the wake of last week's election. Van Jones, a former member of the Obama administration on CNN on the night of the election, gave voice to the fear of many parents. Let's listen.
When you outdo expectations, you know, good for you. But there's another side to this. People have talked about a miracle. I'm hearing about a nightmare. It's hard to be a parent tonight for a lot of us. You tell your kids, don't be a bully. You tell your kids, don't be a bigot. You tell your kids, do your homework and be prepared. And then you have this outcome, and you have people putting children to bed tonight. And they're afraid of breakfast. They're afraid of, how do I explain this to my children? I have Muslim friends who are texting me tonight saying, should I leave the country? I have families of immigrants that are terrified tonight. This was many things. This was a rebellion against the elites. True, it was a complete reinvention of politics and polls, it's true. But it was also something else. We've talked about race. I mean, we've talked about everything but race tonight. We've talked about income. We've talked about class. We've talked about region. We haven't talked about race. This was a white lash. This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president in part. And that's the part where the pain comes. And Donald Trump has a responsibility tonight to come out and reassure people that he is going to be the president of all the people who he insulted and offended and brushed aside. Yeah, when you say, you know, you want to take your country back, you got a lot of people who feel that we're not represented well either. But we don't want to feel that someone has been elected by throwing away some of us to appeal more deeply to others. So this is a deeply painful moment tonight. I know it's not just about race. There's more going on than that. But race is here, too. We got to talk about it.
That's Van Jones from CNN on election night. We'd like to know how you've approached this dilemma in your own household. Our number here, 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. If you have parents or thoughts for other parents who are struggling with this, we'd like to hear from you. 816-235-2888. Dr. Wes Crenshaw will be our guide today. He's a Lawrence psychologist and author on topics related to teens and parenting. Dr. Wes, so good to have you back.
Welcome. Nice to be here, Steve.
Is it too late to be having these conversations? The election, after all, was a whole 6 days ago, Wes.
Well, we're going to be having this conversation for years to come,
frankly.
So it's, I think you always have an experience of shock when things don't go as you expect them to. Sometimes it's good shock, sometimes it's sad shock, but you got to let the shock wear off before you can really look at things rationally. So we're going to be recycling this discussion in the weeks and years to come.
You know, you've been working as a psychologist for almost 25 years now, and Have you seen kids, you've seen kids through a number of social changes during those 25 years. You say this change, this election result is different in some ways. Why is that?
It's markedly different, and I don't want to make too many comparisons to 9/11 here. I think they're radically different situations, but kids that I talk to and I have quite a bit of communication with them are much more frightened and worried about this than they were in the days following 9/11. And I think when you ask them about that,
that's hard. That's a little hard for me to believe.
I understand, and here is the difference: that was perceived as an external threat. And what it did was galvanize Americans, and kids caught on to that very quickly. We could, you know, I have my 9/11 speech that I taught people after that, and I've used it again and again through the Aurora shootings and all of the violence we've seen, that you need to be able to tell kids, don't worry, adults have things under control. Mm-hmm. As bad as it can get, we have it under control. That does not feel how it is right now. And so what kids are responding to is what's not an external threat, but a sense that what they have come to believe in as a generation, not all of them, of course, there are plenty of young people that supported Donald Trump, but as a generation, things they hold dear are threatened internally now, not by the external threat.
Hmm. Well, speaking of the notion that a lot of kids supported Donald Trump, I mean, just like adults, there were a lot of young people who backed Mr. Trump. I can imagine those kids are catching flack from their peers now at school or even in social settings. How do they handle the backlash coming at them and that may be coming at them for some time to come, Wes?
Well, I think schools do bear some responsibility for keeping order. I think in theory, what would be helpful is to have some civil discourse about that. Remember civil discourse?
Yeah.
Back in the day?
Once upon a time.
Sure. We did things. I don't know what you did in your school, but we routinely, when I was in high school, and I grew up in Western Kansas, no redder place than that, and we would do reports on, you know, pro and con abortion rights. Mm-hmm. And we didn't think twice about turning those in, and people, there was some spirit of tolerance about differing views. Now, it all leaned in one direction, but you could express differing views, and the school kept that as an ethic. And I think that's what schools are going to have to do, that is to say people have a right to express their views pro or con about any issue, but they've got to hold it in a civil framework. And that has become, I think, much more difficult in the last few months.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. How are you handling your own kids when it comes to the results of last week's election? What issues are they raising? How are you responding to them? Dr. Wes Crenshaw is in the house with us to talk about all this. But if a child, is getting flack, you know, at school, whether it's because he or she supported Donald Trump, or whether it's because they supported Hillary Clinton, or maybe it's because they are Muslim or gay, and those issues are coming into play here in school conversations. How should parents begin to wrestle with that? Because that's gets really difficult. That's we'll push a parent's button faster than anything else in the world.
Yeah, we've talked in previous shows about bullying, and that the critical element in handling that is that parents not propose or assume that it's not their child causing the problem. And so if you have situations where kids are getting put down or bullied for having one position or the other or supporting one party or the other, parents need to step in and say, again, civil discourse. And I always have said it's better to punish and reward your kid for how they treat others than whether they get the cat box cleaned or not.
That's
people spend way too much time worrying about the dishwasher than how people treat one another. And I think we may have perhaps not unprecedented era, but we're going to have a pretty significant era of having to manage those kinds of feelings, because I think kids are in an activist mode right now, and that can be great, as we will discuss later, and it can be really problematic. Adults mm-hmm. are going to have some support for the process, regardless of what side they may support.
The process meaning the electoral process.
The Well, I think more the larger political process. I think we're going to be in, and this may just make people pass out, but I think we're going to have 4 years of politics from this point forward that are going to be intense. And kids have become interested in this like I've never seen before.
Really?
Absolutely. Well, you know, remember 4 years ago we did a show where we really were like reaching out to kids and telling them, you need to be a part of the process. The future is yours. Vote. You said read the paper. And I guess every everyone
that
in America
didn't go very far.
Well, only that little part.
Yeah.
The rest of it, I think everyone in America must have listened to that show because kids went out and really became vested, particularly in Bernie Sanders originally, but then just in the whole process. I have kids that I never would ever have dreamed would be the least bit interested in politics, probably wouldn't vote. And they are so clear on the issues. Social media has helped with this. They understand a lot of issues and are interested in them. So we have a whole body politic of young people that I think is going to increase.
Mm. What have kids been saying to you since last week's election and the results there, Wes?
Well, it is. I started getting text messages at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's nice they think that I sleep, I guess. Some of those I didn't get to.
Or they don't. As you think they don't, you don't sleep. Yeah.
Right. And there were really two or three common responses, a sense of fear about issues that they have held dear. And then also a sense of kind of disillusionment or hopelessness. One person said to me, you know, how do we believe in this anymore? And I said, well, what got us here is that democracy does work. We may not all agree on how it has worked in the last few months and the way it has been transacted, but the election was perfectly fair. And so if you're going to be upset about it, you're going to have to be an even stronger and more active participant. I think we have to encourage kids not to give up. But yeah, those were the two main – and I mean people really expressing what we call adjustment disorder, which is a sense of anxiety or depression around an event, you know, divorce or whatever it may be.
Well, you sense it among Democrats around town. People are really sort of hunkered down, didn't want to go out this weekend and see people. They just are really staying to themselves, at least some of them, and not wanting to engage socially yet because they're so taken aback by what happened here.
Yeah, you kind of have to understand where this generation is coming from. And I always want to reiterate, kids aren't a big blob of sameness. They're not all the same person. But in general, the direction this generation has gone, and I've been watching them for many years, is there's kind of three issues. And the first is my daughter's 20, and she was right in the middle of the era where they were talking about anti-bullying, and everything was anti-bullying. And you remember we did a show on it, and I said, we need to be careful because if everything is bullying, then nothing is bullying. And we needed to really be clear what that definition was. But they've all learned this, and at the same time, they've all developed this sense of tolerance for diversity, whether it be gender identity or sexual identity or racial equality. Imperfect as that may be, this is something that has been very interesting for them. And then you see the vestment they have in politics. And those three things came together and have really set up young people to be frustrated and scared and disappointed.
Helping kids adjust to last week's election, that's our topic today. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is in the house taking your questions and comments. I'm going to go to Brent here in just a moment. But first, Sarah sent us this email. My incredibly bright, mature, and aware daughter and her likewise best friend were shaken to their core, she writes. It has affected relationships at school with friends. My 10-year-old son is struggling with his friends and teammates that have expressed bigoted thoughts. It is bearing on his mind and affecting the way he views his sports teammates. All we can do is reinforce in a calm and logical way why we feel the way we do and stick to what we feel is right.
Yes, well put.
Very well put.
I think the other thing I would add to that is that within this idea of civil discourse, it's good to believe those things, but it's also good to keep talking about them and to try and share with one another what we believe and to listen to other people's views. Those who support Trump have views, and those who supported Hillary Clinton, or at least supported those ideas, have views. And sharing those is going to be critical and to getting along. And I must say, I'm a little worried about it, but I appreciate exactly that angle.
816-235-2888 is the number, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Brent from Kansas City, Missouri. Brent, thanks for calling.
I don't understand how so many parents have expressed their feelings and opinions so vehemently to their children. I mean, I have a 9-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son, and I keep them informed, but I don't let the vitriol for one side or the other come out. I'd like them to form their own opinions, even though I want them to learn my morals, but based on that, they need to make their own decisions. And I just think too many parents unconsciously force their beliefs and opinions about a particular party or candidate on their children. So there shouldn't even be any. My children don't have any anxiety over this, even though they made their opinions known that they wanted Hillary as president. But they've moved on. They go outside and play.
Did you say they were 6 and 9?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's a little different age group.
It's a little young.
Yeah, and I think you do want to protect them from really a lot of the things that were being said. Now, I did a TV thing a few weeks ago where I said the idea that we need to send all the kids to bed and not watch the debate is a mistake, and I would stand by that. For kids middle school and up, I think they need to be involved in those discussions and to process some of this, because it's just not avoidable. They're going to hear it at school. It's sort of like trying to keep people away from internet things we don't like. Good luck. There's a plug or a Wi-Fi everywhere. And so kids are going to pick up on this, and if parents aren't having a dialogue with them about it, it's hard. But I agree with younger kids, trying to tamp down some of the anxiety is pretty critical. And it's good that you were able to do that. You have kind of a firewall there, I guess.
Well, yeah, and I, ever since I was young, I've always been politically engaged, I would say. I mean, I wrote a letter to the president when I was 4. I mean, I've always had an interest in that.
Did he write back, Brent?
He did, Jimmy Carter.
Oh, no kidding.
Well, you're much of my year, almost. You're a little younger than I am, but I came home from school every day in 4th grade to watch the Watergate hearings, and then I went to see Senator Sam Ervin speak at Henry Levitt Arena in Wichita when he came around. So I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, and my 9-year-old, to be honest with you, she has a better grasp of the issues with each candidate than I would say most adults I know.
I believe you.
Wow, that's great. Brent, I'm glad you called. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Good illustration of how aware kids are. We can't, we've done shows on pornography and all sorts of stuff before. You must be in a conversation with your kids, because they will find things that are troubling, whether they're emotional or sexual or whatever. They will find those things. And if they have a way to talk to you about them, they will be protected much more so than if they don't.
Okay, let's do this, Wes. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about talking to your kids about what happened last week in America. Again, our number 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. On Friday's program, we spoke with the creator of MuslimGirl.com and heard the soundtrack of the Vietnam War. Find those conversations at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, the history of the electric guitar, and learn about the murder of Emmett Till, which shocked the world but helped drive the civil rights movement. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. This hour, we're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw from Lawrence about how to talk to your kids in the wake of last week's election. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. I'm going to go to Kira from who's calling from Rhode Island, but she's from Lee Summit. And Kira, good morning. Nice to have you.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about the need for intergenerational conversation.
Yes, please.
I feel like it's not just about our parents telling us how to deal with these situations, but I'm also realizing that it's a very important time to be speaking to other generations. And throughout the past 6 days, I've had a lot of conversations with other generations about these issues.
And what are you learning, Kira, when you have those conversations?
Patience. I'm learning patience, but I'm also just learning that both sides are having a problem feeling like neither are listening, and that's throughout the generations as well. And I think that pushing the idea that we all might not be listening to each other and we all need to listen and be aware that is very important to keep the dialogue open.
Why do you think we're not listening as much as we need to be? What is it?
I would say stubbornness, but I also noticed that there's a conflict in the generations right now, that the older generations, it seems like they are seeing this as just another another election, and therefore it's an overreaction of the younger generation. And
the overreaction, Kira, is what? What are you referring to there?
I'm referring to the protesting that's going on.
Ah.
And that, as well as the fact that in the media, people are focusing on the rioting that's going on. But I will tell you that I've been to many protests that are peaceful, and I have no friends across the entire country that are peaceful protests currently.
Hmm. Kira, hang on a little bit. Wes, when she was talking, you were nodding your head. How come?
Yeah, one of the things that I think is concerning, or at least interesting, is the sort of move on. It's over, move on, it's over. And, you know, empirically, that is true. It's over. Donald Trump is the nominee. And for the generation that Kira is speaking of, that it can be very frustrating and worrisome. But to ask them to move on, it's just they weren't that big on Hillary. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like they were, oh, my gosh, she is my candidate. Not at all. All the polls tell us that. What they are concerned about are the issues that are overtly stated to be on the table right now. Mm-hmm. Reproductive rights. This morning on Morning Edition, they were talking about people rushing out to get IUDs as fast as they can to have inexpensive birth control, or have free birth control, because that may not be there. There's concern, and I don't know if it's founded or not, about where LGBTQ rights will go. The speaker at the beginning of the hour talked about being a gay Republican, mm-hmm. and that is great, but I don't think Donald Trump's going to get up there and outlaw being gay tomorrow, you know? Mm-hmm. But the Supreme Court situation has held a bulwark for LGBTQ rights, as it has for racial and potentially gender equality, and that could well change. And so young people very much understand this. It's not really about loving Hillary or hating Donald Trump or even some of the things that were said. It's their understanding that what we grew up with in the last 50 years of the 20th century could be very different in the next 4 years.
How would you go about sort of stimulating those conversations between the generations that you're talking about, Kira? What do you recommend?
I recommend a large dosage of patience, especially with this upcoming holiday, and to continue to remind yourself that, especially for the white people of my generation, that if we can do anything, it is to try and continue to open up these dialogues with our parents and to keep our patience with those conversations. I'd also like to say that the move-on aspect, it's not about the election, it's about what the election brought out in the people what it has proven.
Well, one of the biggest issues that has been on the table for young people has actually surprised me a little bit. I was on St. Louis on the Air the day after Ferguson, and I said there, I hope this becomes more about building something up than burning stuff down. That certainly has become true. And mm-hmm. for young people, in college age young people, Black Lives Matter is a big deal. It's important to them, people of all races. And that is at the forefront of concerns as to whether this will, where there will be a law and order response versus an attempt to tamp down some of those fears. Yeah. And that is yet another one on the minds of young people.
Well, Kira, I'm sure glad you called.
I'm glad I called, too.
Good luck at Thanksgiving time, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
It's a good call.
Yeah, absolutely. Wes, you've said, again, our number here, 816-235-2888. We'd like to hear from parents, from kids who are struggling to deal in the aftermath with this election, deal with their own feelings, their own thoughts. Again, 816-235-2888. You see this, Wes, as kind of a grieving process. What does that look like to you?
Yeah, I thought I was going to say something so clever today about this, having the stages of grief, and so I just Googled it, and it's just all over the internet, both pro and con. One of the things, this comes from a book by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross from like the late 60s, early 70s, and it has stuck with us. And the idea is that you move through these stages of grief, which are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And what we've learned really over the years is in any saddening event, a death or, you know, dropping out of school or whatever it may be, those really aren't stages. Like you go through them and then you're done and you move on. They're really more of like a cycle that you rotate through over the course of time as you're moving away from the event. And so you'll kind of get over the depressive aspect of it and move into acceptance. And then later on, you know, in this case, the inaugural comes or whatever, or there's some court hearing, Supreme Court ruling that you do not like, and you'll go through that again. So for those who are of that mind, this is going to be a cycle of grief that comes probably for many years to come. These are a lot of very fundamental issues.
I bet there's someone listening to this out there right now, maybe a Trump supporter who's saying, get over yourselves. The election's over. And I think one of your points here that maybe has been suggested, this election appears to be different than others.
I mean, it is for two reasons. And this is, young people reflect this so clearly. It is because the issues are, this is a tipping point of issues that have never been really in play. You know, there's a path to making it possible for each state to ban all abortions. And this is just something young people took for granted. They don't really know that there was a struggle for that once upon a time, or whether it is issues of whether police are scrutinized more closely for their treatment of mostly black males, but minorities in general, or will that become something that is no longer a priority? The federal government will not have as much influence in those cases as it has had in the last 8 years. So a lot of things that are really at their touchstones for this generation. One of the kids in a teacher's class shared with her, they were processing this in middle school class, and she said, I'm scared that I won't be allowed to love who I want to love.
Hmm.
And, you know, that may be an overshoot. One of the things I talk about with kids is the bear. If you're out in Colorado and you see that sign, you know, that says bears in the woods, tie up your food, and you forget to tie up your food and you're in a tent and you hear a noise, there's a pretty good chance it's a bear.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're here in Leawood and we hear a noise outside and you say to Katie, oh, it's a bear. That's anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things we have to keep an eye on. What's a bear and what's just pretend a bear? What,
right.
We don't know. And this is what's scary to everybody is. Every day on this network and on every network I watch, people say, we just don't know what's going to happen. I've never been through an election where we just didn't know what was going to happen.
So as you went through this election cycle, what were the issues that kids were talking to you about the most? What was on their minds? What were you hearing from them as you wandered through September and October here?
Well, I mentioned Black Lives Matter, which was a huge deal, especially coming out of the Mizzou incidents last year.
Yeah.
Gender inequality, you know, young women, we've talked about it on here, who are on the march, 60% of college graduates are women now. They are really interested in feminism. They are interested in the furthering of gender equality, pay equality, all of those kind of things. The idea of toxic masculinity.
Toxic masculinity.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that much. This is the
idea. That's an interesting term.
Well, it goes with the whole rape culture, which is the next one on the list. The idea that men create an environment out of male privilege that is toxic to women. And it is easy to just blow that off until you really spend some time talking with young women and understand how vulnerable they feel. We have discussed that before here. They're very worried that some of the things that were said that were certainly surprising in the campaign are not just bravado or, you know, just a misspeaking, but that they're really hate speech against women. Now, again, is that a bear or, you know, or not? We don't know. But that's how they feel. They feel aggressed against in the election. You've got, again, the reproductive rights, the right of sexual expression, gender identity, college debt costs, although that kind of disappeared with Bernie, but this fear of being in such debt, and they were sort of imagining that maybe there would be a free college plan somewhere in here, although that really never looked very plausible with the Congress. And then this just sense that democracy won't work for them. That, you know, that's the one that worries me the most. And
that's a scary, that's a really scary prospect.
That's the worst one of all, in my opinion. They have to, young people, I'm hoping, will become emboldened and supported in that by families to really be active. And whatever side they're on, they need to be involved.
Talking to your kids about the election last week, that's our topic here, 816-235-2888. Jim from Shawnee. Jim, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Nice to have you, Jim.
Yeah, thanks. I have two college kids that are absolutely distraught over the election results. But the question I've got is, you talk about civil discourse. And in my experience living in Kansas, how can you even find an example of civil discourse? When you turn on the radio, you've got Levin, you've got Rush, you've got Savage, you've got, you know, Fox News. Where do you see, where can you actually go to see and partake in civil discourse? I think it's a pipe dream. I just don't see it.
Well, Jim, welcome to KCUR Public Radio. I'm glad you called this station and you're listening, because that's what we do here, Jim.
You beat me to the joke, man. I was headed there.
And that's what we're about. And I hope that that's recognize and acknowledge, West.
I was going for the same point, but I agree with you. That is concerning. But let us remember, let me say a quick Kansas point, since I just drove in from there minutes ago. It is interesting that that I think the populace is hearing some of the concerns and is shifting back in the other direction. None of the Supreme Court justices were booted off the bench, and a much more moderate legislature is coming back in. And so I think people get sick of that stuff.
Well, Jim's larger point is well taken, that the dearth of civil conversation in our society is breathtaking right now.
Well, I don't know what your thoughts are, but I think that there is a position that lends itself more to that kind of bombast. And it isn't the one that you and I talk about.
Yeah.
When we get on and talk about our things, we don't make it. I don't say, I support gay and lesbian rights. Let's burn down the town.
Right.
I think that the only real answer is we need to always be starting as a community those conversations and inviting people to join. And I'm going to bet you a lot more people are going to be joining in those conversations, because they're going to feel it. Make it happen, brother.
There's a group called the Public Square based at UMKC, Jim, it's gotten a very strong following, where it's getting together once a month or once every couple months, having a civil conversation over some of the most hot-button issues in society these days. It's called the Public Square, and I can't recommend enough that you try to connect with that group.
It's a good idea.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're listening, Jim. Thanks very much. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You know, Saturday Night Live was so good the other night, and the last thing that she said in her opening when she's playing Hallelujah is, "I'm not giving up and neither should you." And I think that is it doesn't matter what position you're in here or whether you feel heartbroken or elated, don't give up.
That was quite an opening to that show. That's
catch
for sure.
It if you haven't seen it.
Bob from Liberty. Bob, you're on Up to Date. Nice to have you.
Well, good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning, Wes.
Hi.
Hi. I am of the older generation, and the bear is here. The tracks are solid in the mud, and between Trump, who some people think could be impeached by Republicans, thereby leading Pence into govern by Trump naming Steve Bannon as his advisor, the bear is here. So people do need to feel their feelings. People do need to be strong, and people do need to reach out to groups for activism. And the activism perhaps should be supporting the American Civil Liberties Union and any other groups, but if people just think everything is going to be okay, they need to monitor and handle their anxiety, but they need to put it into action.
There's good psychology in what you are saying. And when when a client comes to me and says, I'm divorced and I'm feeling hopeless, I don't know how to go on with my life, I don't know what to do, we start finding tasks to go out and do. Mm-hmm. We start looking for ways to you think you said it well, people need to feel their feelings. Too often psychologists have spent time talking people out of how they feel. I ain't about that. We can accept how we feel and then also choose the action that we believe furthers our values and what matters and what brings meaning to our lives.
One thing I read over the weekend about all this, experts say one of the first things parents can do is take time to pause and collect their own thoughts and feelings before they continue talking with their kids, because we know how our kids take their cues from us. I mean, that's
absolutely. You'll remember our PLUS model for dealing with sexuality: pause, listen, understand,
yes.
Sex positive. Well, you can leave out sex positive on this part and just be hopeful and upbeat.
Yeah.
And pause, listen, and understand, and demonstrate a calm response. We use a lot of humor in my family to dispel some of those feelings.
Yeah. Bob, thank you for calling.
Thank you. You guys take care.
You too. The other point that I, again, reading about this weekend in preparation for this show, this notion that explaining to your kids to use this time to explain to kids that, hey, democracy is messy, it's a great learning opportunity, because people tend to view our democracy as especially messy today, and back in the good old days, it was a lot cleaner and pure. Well, I'm here to tell you, as someone who's does some of this for a living, it has been messy for a very long time, going all the way back to the founding of this country, and that's what we are. I mean, democracy is not clean and simple. It's about a collision of ideas, and this is a good time to talk to kids about that.
You bet. We just got back from Chicago. We went to see Hamilton there,
oh,
which I highly recommend. And to talk about messy democracy,
still can't get over that thing's a hit. Can't get over it.
And it's such a good, accurate piece of history, and then done in a way that keeps kids in rapt attention. And it's gotten them all interested in Hamilton. But yeah, messy democracy is at the top of the list of that show.
Mm-hmm. AH just tweeted us this: we remind our kids that no matter who our elected officials are, they all are deserving of the same respect as any other person. Interesting thought from AH there.
Yeah. And they are equally deserving of public critique.
816-235-2888 is the number. We're talking about how to talk to your kids about the big, tumultuous election of last week. Let's go to Roger from Liberty. Roger, you're on Up to Date. Nice to have you.
Good morning. Great program.
Thank you.
I think this is a great opportunity to talk with our children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, about personal responsibility. A lot of the people that I believe voted for Trump voted because they're placing blame on immigrants and others for loss of jobs, et cetera. It's normal to go to that place as humans, but it's an opportunity to talk to our youngsters and people around us about the need for personal responsibility and understanding the bigger dynamics, the economics, the changes in society that have meant that coal is no longer as viable as it used to be, that sort of thing. So that was my comment.
May I add to that excellent point? A lot of people presume, because I'm a psychologist, that my undergraduate degree is in psychology, and actually it isn't. I didn't like rat running very much in college. My undergraduate degree is in political science, sociology, and history. And I cannot emphasize enough, people need to understand history. I understand the math professors say you need to understand math, and the phys ed people say you need phys ed, but there's a critical reason history is important, and that is you can begin to understand some patterns. You had on the show the person who wrote the book Those Angry Days one mm-hmm. time, and because I do whatever you tell me to do, Steve, I listened to that show and bought that book. That is the best book because it talks about the struggle America went through prior to World War II
yeah.
and the vicious, vicious divisiveness in this country with Charles Lindbergh at the top of the anti-intervention league mm-hmm. and Franklin Roosevelt desperately fighting to involve America in a war that if we had not been involved would have gone poorly. This little tidbit of history, and there are many others, it reminds us of that messiness of democracy.
I'm wondering about parents of young girls who had hopes yeah. that Hillary Clinton would make history as the first female president, obviously. How about some thoughts on helping young girls coping with their disappointment as to what happened last week? Because this election did have that extra twist on it, which was so important to so many people.
By all means, listen to her concession speech. I think she made a very wise decision waiting until the next day
yeah.
to do that. And she really gave a message to young women about, again, sort of, I'm not giving up and neither should you. And I think that's more than words. I think it's one, ironically, probably the most inspirational thing that she had in her campaign mm-hmm. this year. Mm-hmm. And so I think that helps. I think also we must continue to encourage young women. They are on the march. And no president is going to undo that. That's not about what the government has given women. It's about what women have taken for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that will always be better than what is given. And I think women are on in a good place to keep doing that. Is everything fixed and it's all pretty? No. But encouraging young women to be on that march is a good thing right now.
Cindy from Prairie Village. Cindy, thanks for calling.
Yes, I was calling up with a comment from my 23-year-old niece.
Right.
She was unhappy about the outcome of the election, and she said one of the reasons was that during her teenage years coming into political awareness, President Obama has been in the office for those eight
right.
years. And she always felt like he would do the right thing for everyone, and she had a lot of trust in him.
Mm-hmm.
And after watching the debates and the campaign, she has listened to the words of our president-elect, and she does not have that trust. And so I was just looking for what would you say to her?
Well,
I don't agree, but...
Yeah,
right.
That's well said, and it is a pretty clear example of the kind of texts that I was getting. I think I would have to suggest that she trust the process of democracy and her role in it. And it may seem like a minor detail, but it is at least worth noting that the popular vote was so close that Hillary Clinton shaved out a tiny little victory. And I'm not rooting for the Electoral College in saying that. I'm reminding your daughter that she has lots of people who support her and agree with her, and she can join with that group, as I have no doubt the Trump folks will join with theirs. This whole idea of things are sure pretty hopeless now is not a good approach.
One other thing I read about over the weekend, don't make those jokes about leaving the country if Trump becomes president. One person said, we can't move away from our problems. We need to move towards them. Interesting, interesting idea.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting to me is we seem to be so divided at this point that even with the example I gave earlier, or you go back to the Civil War or something, we do seem to be in a situation where it's awfully hard to reconcile differences.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people are saying that, And, you know, you got a whole secessionist movement in California back in the news. You know, these things are more expressions of anxiety than they are realistic.
I just missed a call here from Cynthia. But final thoughts here about, you know, maybe the world is it's a scary place, but moving towards problems instead of away from them might be an interesting thought to move out on here.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we also have to, again, this idea of putting everything in context. We have been through some remarkably disturbing experiences in our country over 200 and some odd years. And those have guided us. And I think if you really look at some of what those are, they're worse than you can imagine. And we're not there today.
Wes, always good to have you here.
Yes, we shall do it again.
Dr. Wes Crenshaw from Lawrence, sorry we couldn't get to all our phone calls here today. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow we hear the fascinating history of the electric guitar, and we'll discuss the 1955 murder of 14-year-old Emmett Till, which helped propel the civil rights movement. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, Ryan Hennessy, and Corinne Dorian. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.